It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am, disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down, an American loser the day I was born.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of American Loser. It is the podcast that puts the spotlight firmly on second place. My name is KP Burke. I'm your host here, and my co-host with me, the aforementioned dad on the logo of the podcast here, my handsome dilf of a father, is back in studio. How are you, Lawrence Patrick?
Hey, we're doing fine. We're doing fine. Thank you much.
Good. 20 episodes in, you still get called the handsome dilf of a father.
There you go.
It sure is. It's a argue.
Wanting to lose the handle, but...
It ain't gonna happen.
Actually, we got so the big kahuna is behind the ones and twos, as you guys can hear. That's a familiar voice for regular listeners.
What's going on?
Very happy, as always. We are here at Shared Universe Studio in Eatontown, New Jersey. Mike and Ming taking good care of us, as always. Weird thing, guys. I want to before I introduce our guest real quick. We hit a milestone today on the show. This is our 20th episode, and within those 20 episodes. We have actually now officially, as of today, exceeded over 4,000 total listens. Which is pretty cool.
That's awesome.
So yeah. I'm very happy about that part. A lot of them, we're also trending in the Russian Federation, which is concerning.
Yeah. Which what? Now places us firmly on the FBI watch list.
Yeah. So we are an iTunes podcast to watch, but also persons of interest in several several international incidents.
I'm going to be walking through like a Russian area of town. Someone's going to hear my voice go, Big Kahuna!
But that being said, we got to introduce our guest here. Now, for listeners of the show, you guys have met Cousin Kelly before, who's come on, who is our scholarly English person, okay? Not an English person,
but a literature student
and teacher.
Literature scholar.
As it were. So,
the one who knows how to read.
Yeah. And Cal's great, but we're going to go ahead. We're going to bring in another cousin here, if it's okay. We're going to bring in – this is our intellectual get, all right? The on paper, the most academic source we've brought in on the show so far.
On paper.
Guys, please welcome my cousin, one of my favorite people on planet Earth, Dr. Kate Burklepis.
All right,
well,
Kate.
I'm happy to be here.
Dr. Kate,
thank you for
doing it.
You are a PhD doctor.
Yeah, I am.
And we have an interesting topic here today for you because you also live down this area of the Jersey Shore, right?
I do. 10 minutes from here.
It's pretty cool.
Well, nice commute.
Not for nothing. 30 minutes from here, because we're in Eatontown, New Jersey. 30 minutes from here is the site of an infamous tragedy.
I know.
All right, and it is not the time I asked Andrea Cohen to prom, and she said no.
Did that happen in Lakehurst?
Close. That was a Seaside Heights thing where it's like, but it's 3 o'clock in the morning. But not for nothing. Also, do you have any good Jersey Shore stories that you can tell on air, Dr. Burke?
Jersey Shore stories?
Yeah, because it's always stuff going on down here.
Oh my gosh. I'm married with children, so I'm like playing in the waves and stuff, but...
The hook.
Right. Enough said.
You're like, what can I say that my kids won't hear in 20 years and be like, what was mom talking about now?
We're not talking about your former life. We're talking about today, so we'll keep it simple.
Sorry.
No, you're off the hook on that one here then. But
I'm not going to DJs too much these days. or ever, for a matter of fact.
Well, what if I told you that on May 6, 1937, whatever bad night anybody's ever had down the Jersey Shore, these guys probably had the worst. At 7.05 p.m. at Lakehurst Air Station, right here in the great state of New Jersey, you can't do a Jersey tie-in like we do for most of the other episodes of the show. We always like to try to shoehorn in something for New Jersey here.
Shoehorn in. Like we've went around the Mulberry Bush trying to figure out some Jersey references, but...
And we stopped being able to make Bill Parcells references as well a long time ago. But that being said, this one, we didn't have to do any research at all because it happened right here in Lakehurst, New Jersey. LZ-129, okay, a.k.a. the Hindenburg. All right, a very famous Zeppelin, if you will. Attempted to dock with its mooring mast. Now, we're going to unpack what all this shit means here in a second. But just know that as Zeppelins go, the Hindenburg is the Titanic of Zeppelins. Okay, that's really all anybody needs to know at home here. Kahuna, I think you have the world-famous audio queued up here for us.
I do.
If I could go ahead and ask you to play that for me. It's one of the most famous recordings on Earth.
And again, the van had cracked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames. Get it started. It's rising terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between it. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the furniture screaming around it.
That is perfect right there. That's the line of the century, if you're one of the most famous broadcasts in
all
history.
All the humanity.
It is. I mean, everybody spoofed it. You've heard that before, right,
Oh,
Kate?
Of course. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're not catching you off guard on that one.
I mean, you watch the video, and you literally see people running out of the flames as it's, like, disintegrating in front of them,
yeah,
on top of them.
Yeah, that was a live radio broadcast.
The first podcast.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, not for nothing. The gentleman who did that, I believe Herb Morrison was his name. He actually that footage was taken, and that was the first coast to coast international broadcast. That was what a sensational news story this year was. To give a little context to that video, because that shit's horrifying to look at. But it was an 800-foot-long, lighter than air, rigid hull vessel. Okay, that's what the Hindenburg here was. That Zeppelin that they were talking about?
Yeah, technically speaking, it was a rigid hull.
804 feet. What are some comparisons on that for size?
I saw an image on the internet where it spanned the size of the White House.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's really hard to put a perspective on, but if you've ever been to the airport and gone flown modern day times and jumped into a 747, the Hindenburg would be basically 104 feet long. Now, when you say 104, what is that, right? Can you picture that? Basically, that's three Boeing 747s end to end.
Jesus.
So that's how long that puppy is. It's four Goodyear blimps. So if you're watching the Super Bowl and you know you see the Goodyear blimp flying overhead or some other big-time sports game, that's four Goodyear blimps end-to-end.
It's interesting to think about. It's three 747s, and they only had 95 people in there.
How insane
right.
is that?
Everybody
right.
had some good leg room.
That's right. Yeah, not so much, because that was one of the—
But at what cost?
Right.
But at what cost?
Right.
No, there was as you were saying, Kate, the 36 passengers and 61 crew members aboard were about to go down in history, very much pun intended. At 7:25.
That was low.
Oh, I know, bud. time and tragedy equals comedy, Kahuna, as we've covered. So, at 7.
That's the equation? You did that math.
Yeah, no, because I think we're 6 years removed from the time I bought the house down in Chad.
All right.
But at 7:25 p.m., the Hindenburg suddenly burst into flames and began crashing a distance of 200 feet. Okay, that's two football fields crashing immediately. The whole thing happened within a matter of seconds. Absolutely incinerated. I mean, that footage is still uncomfortable to look at, even by a modern standard.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, it literally incinerated. 37 seconds.
And, I mean, 37 seconds, too. That is, there's Ramones songs that are longer than that. I mean, that's uncomfortable. But, like we said, it killed 13 of the passengers and 21 crewmen, as well as one civilian on the ground. And when you combine the incident with the footage of NBC's Herb Morrison on the ground with his Oh, the Humanity call, this has become absolutely synonymous with the tragedy. Now, we tend to cover American history on this one. American losers is what we like to hone in on. But the funny thing is this incident took place in America, but these are actually German losers we're going to be covering here today, Kate. So,
welcome to America, and now you're going to die, right?
Essentially,
well, some Americans coming back home, though, right?
I mean, yes. And also the tie-in for – because the Hindenburg is interesting, especially for me, because this one was very difficult to stay focused on for the research with. We had Kahuna-like ADD on this one.
He didn't like that.
It was they can't tell you're flipping me the bird in an audio medium. All right, Cajones?
I'm just going to mute my mic. Go away.
But, the Hindenburg was at the time the largest dirigible ever built. Dirigible being that rigid hull, the bone structure, if you will, inside of a balloon is pretty much what it was. And the ship was the pride of pre-war Nazi Germany, a spectacle and achievement in what was known as lighter-than-air flight. The Hindenburg disaster completely pretty much obliterated the lighter-than-air industry.
Yeah, that was definitely a downturn for lighter-than-air passenger service.
Well, you know what I like to think of it as? I like to think of it that the Zeppelin business went out post-Hindenburg the same way that Trim Spa went out when Anna Nicole Smith died. Do you guys remember the diet supplement she was hawking?
Oh my God, I can't even believe it.
Black and white commercial. Trim Spa, baby. Yeah, they weren't selling much of that.
I forgot about that. She got really skinny.
She sure did.
What a train wreck.
It was she was a fascinating person. For another episode of American Loser, I suppose.
Oh, my God, dude.
But
making a lot of people cringe in this studio.
Oh, no, this is the first one we're doing during the work week, okay. So I'm bitter. But that being said, this is the biggest tragedy in lighter-than-air travel. Lawrence Patrick, what the fuck is lighter-than-air?
Well, lighter-than-air is lighter-than-air, just as you said. I mean, flight is, got a very long history, but a very rapid progression towards the end there to modern day times. But lighter than air, there's two different ways of gaining flight. Having a big balloon with a gas or hot air inside that big balloon that's going to be lighter than the air surrounding it, than the normal atmospheric air temperature. And then an airplane kind of a thing where you're creating the atmosphere or the air to flow around a fixed wing to gain lift. I feel like I'm teaching again, but
for those that don't know, Lawrence Patrick Burke is a retired shop teacher and routinely would teach us the principles of flight, which just for those listening at home, LP. Actually, Kate, do you know any of them by chance? I'm not putting you on the spot here again, but...
The principles of flight. I'm a biologist.
That's right.
Well said. I just wanted to, we're throwing that one out there for you. Right. There's nothing you can say that's going to make me laugh harder than when Kelly, we asked her what the rapture was, and she goes, oh, it's a type of music, right? I love you, Kel, if you're listening. What are the four principles of flight, Lawrence Patrick?
Well, for flight, just a little correction here. I mean, yeah, I was originally a shop teacher or an industrial arts teacher, but then I got myself retooled or got a retread to become a technology education teacher. So we were designing.
You had a little bit of a reboot there.
Yeah, we had more of a design problem solving kind of a thing. So I would throw a bag of crap at the kids and tell them to go build an airplane out of a foam meat tray and a little toy motor and that kind of stuff. But we would talk about, to start with, you got to know what the forces of flight. And basically, there's only four forces of flight, and you got to bring them into a balance. Two are negative, two are positive. You got gravity. That's holding you down. That's holding you down on the ground. You want to overcome gravity somehow or other with lift. All right, so that's going the opposite direction. And now, if you want to move around horizontally, because gravity and lift are basically vertical forces, up or down. If you want to move side to side or from left to right or horizontally, then you're going to have to deal with thrust, something to make you move in that direction. And what's holding you back from that is drag, that, something's going to be pushing back against you. That's drag.
Friction?
Yeah, atmospheric drag. So now, how do you achieve all of that crap? Well, if you're going to overcome gravity, you got to overcome gravity with lift. You're going to get lift in lighter-than-air aircraft by having some kind of a gas that's lighter than the surrounding atmosphere, be it a hot air balloon, right? You're going to heat air up. Most everybody knows that heat rises. So if you can get the air to be hotter than the surrounding air and hold it within in a bag in a balloon, that's going to give you lift.
Did they ever try to do that on a bigger scale than like the hot air balloons that we've seen?
Initially that was really the first flight was way back when in like
Well, there was balloons in the 1700s, France.
Right, 17.
Yeah, but they've always been kind of limited to like a basket that could carry four people or what have you, right? I mean, yeah, it could never get bigger than that. That was
the initial start. So, I mean, the start of the technology of lighter-than-air aircraft was way back when in 1783.
How many people did the Hindenburg hold when it went down? Or how many people could it hold?
I don't know. There were 95 people in there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we don't remember the – we don't know if they were accounting for all seats were occupied, if you will. But it was a pretty historic flight.
And I think it was like high class. You had your own cabin.
Right.
There were lounges. I mean, people were like milling about. It wasn't like a seat where you were strapped in and you had to stay there the whole
time. Right, right.
You know, it was like
– Right.
You could walk around.
Oh, yeah. I think you had a cabin with a bed and everything.
It wasn't a flying Greyhound is what we're saying.
That's right.
The idea was that it would replace the cruise liner.
Yes.
Right.
And so I think they wanted to like mimic that experience.
Well, the big comparison to that was the Queen Mary, which was the largest
ocean liner
at the time. So the Hindenburg, you could go from Europe to America, you know, transatlantic flight or travel either by going on an ocean liner. And the top of the line ocean liner was the Queen Mary, or you could go with the Hindenburg. Now there were a lot of comparisons back and forth. The Hindenburg, because you're now traveling in the air, and weight restrictions are pretty huge because you know you got this big giant friggin' balloon that's going to be carrying you up, they're providing the lift. Your cabin, you would have your own cabin and everything else, but it's going to be small in comparison to what you might be able to come away with on a luxury liner like the Queen Mary.
Now, just that being said real quick, I know for a fact that Lawrence Patrick has been up in a regular hot air balloon. Have you been up in one ever, Kate?
I never have.
Okay. Cahoons.
Never will.
I was waiting for him to be like,
I don't think I ever will, too. I'm totally afraid of heights.
Oh, they're nerve-wracking.
Very cool.
You're going to walk away with a newfound respect for them during this podcast.
Yeah, it's very, very cool to be in a hot air balloon.
Is it? You've been
on? There's no... no sensation of like a big time push or throw back in your seat kind of a thing like you might have when you're taking off with a jet. You know, all of a sudden that balloon hits that buoyancy kind of a thing that you're floating like a cork in the water that all of a sudden you look over the edge of that basket and like, holy shit, I'm 300 feet
away. You know? But that's what vertigo would say.
Yeah, there's no sensation. There's no sensation there. And hot air balloon, and again, the initial start of that whole type of flight was way back when in 1783. So, I mean, you're talking Revolutionary War time that stuff's happening. And there were two brothers, Montgolfier brothers. They were Frenchmen who were in like a paper industry kind of a thing. And they put together this one of the first hot air balloons because they were like burning paper and they noticed that the paper ash is rising up in the flames. So, why is that happening?
Well, kids listening at home, please play with fire. It's important to us.
That's right.
All right. You don't know what you're about to invent.
The age of discovery. Right. Go play with matches, kid. You'll discover something.
You'll discover fire, Matt.
Yeah, but they were like one of the originators of this whole thing. But their first balloons were like made out of cloth and paper that they were just holding some kind of a bag together to capture that hot air, and they were burning straw to create the heat.
I would imagine those paper bags would catch fire.
Well,
oh my God!
That said, yeah, that did happen, and they came crashing down because the fire ignited the balloon itself. So, you know, that was not a good thing. But going back to the whole Queen Mary versus the Hindenburg kind of a thing, the Hindenburg, you had to have a lot of coin in order to travel via the Hindenburg. That was really first-class flight. Although your space might be a little bit cramped, there was a lot of comparisons back and forth as to which was the better way of going. You could go on to the Queen Mary and you'd have more space and you could walk around and everything else, but you're still taking 5 days to cross the Atlantic. And you're going to have fine dining and all that kind of stuff. But back in the day with the Queen Mary, you didn't have stabilizers on that big ship. So invariably, you're going to get seasick at the same time. So you got to say, well, do I want to go 5 days being seasick, or do I want to go pay the extra bucks and go on the Hindenburg and I'm across the Atlantic in 2 days?
And I'm not bobbing around like a cork on the water.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And time is money.
And time is money. So.
It's crazy you bring up that comparison because you ever seen the movie The Original Poseidon Adventure?
Oh, yeah, I loved that.
I love that movie, but that's actually based on something that happened to the Queen Mary where it almost tipped over, but it got hit by this humongous wave.
Rogue wave.
A rogue wave. And when you said that, I was just like, oh, my God, wait. Yeah, I would much prefer to ride in a Zeppelin. That sounds a little bit better.
Yeah, there was no sensation. Yeah. In the Hindenburg, there's no sensation of, you know, up and down. It's just, you're just floating along and it's, you know, everybody's happy.
But I would think wind would have to make your ride
absolutely. And in that time frame, too, you know, it's prevailing headwinds or tailwinds and everything else, so things are going to be adjusted. But just, you know, we have that today, even with jet flight. So
I imagine the cabin with that was, I always think of it as being in Ghostbusters 2. When the Ghostbusters take the Statue of Liberty and they're up in the crown, that's the whole thing's actually moving around and everything, but they're only in that one little tiny part of the thing that's moving the rest of the ship. So the cabin compared to the actual balloon itself, I keep calling it a balloon. That's not the correct term for it, but the canopy that they had with those rigid hulls inside that we're going to explain in a second why we started putting bones and ribs inside of these things. That really was so huge that it dwarfs the size of the cabin. But like you were saying, Kate, a lot of legroom on here. It's also a fancy brand new technology.
Sure.
So people, why wouldn't you? Why don't it show off a little bit? Right. You know, show up in an Aston Martin if you can.
There's a real good comparison to, well, not modern day today, but just a few years back. Like if you wanted to go to France, you could jump into, or even London, you could jump into the Concorde and be there in a couple of hours. So literally you could go to the airport right after breakfast, New York time, and be in France and have lunch in Paris. You know,
I don't know.
But again,
but they don't fly that anymore,
limited passengers.
I don't think so.
Limited number of passengers and you know, very expensive. And the Concorde no longer flies. That just got cost prohibitive. And there's a lot of environmental sound, and there's all kinds of complications with the Concorde. But basically, people didn't want to pay the bucks for that. Extra speed, if you will.
Just to unpack this here for a second, as we're talking about Zeppelins, and Zeppelin is almost like the rock band, where they presumably borrowed from some other influences of theirs and then kind of made their own thing. The design of a Zeppelin, which is what the Hindenburg was, borrowed heavily off of a couple other ideas. Now, one of the things that stands out here when we were doing our research, there's this name that keeps popping up. Thaddeus S.C. Lowe, an American, nonetheless, a New Hampshire American, too,
ooh,
Kate.
There you go.
Granite State, baby.
Absolutely. Some famous people up there in my family, as it were. But so now Thaddeus S.C. Lowe is an interesting guy. He's essentially a boy genius and a self-made scientist, okay? So he's got not a whole lot of formal education here, but the guy's just a brilliant dude. And he's the original pioneer of ballooning in America. He's been obsessed with flight his entire life here. And in 1857, and like I said, we don't have to do any legwork on the shoehorns for Jersey this time. In 1857, he has the first tethered balloon flight where he goes up with the balloon in a tethered flight, which, as you explained to me, Dad, meant that there's just a cable on the ground holding him in place
right.
So he can't float
right.
away.
It's like right. a little kid's party balloon that you're holding on to that string. If the kid lets go of that string, the balloon is bye-bye, and it's going to carry you to wherever the prevailing winds might take you.
Yeah, you ain't going to Oz with this thing, pretty much.
Yeah, now he's on a tethered balloon, and basically what that is you're running the line out like a kite, and when you want to come back down again, somebody on the ground is cranking you back in again.
Now, he launched this from his farm, Kate. Now, the most unbelievable story, the most unbelievable part of this story is that there was once farmland in Hoboken, New Jersey, where the story happened. Okay.
Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah. Now, it's all friggin' high-rises and everything like that. Now, it's essentially this guy would just be hovering above a vegan coffee shop or something. But anyway, it did make me laugh, too, because he was married at the time. And it must be frustrating to be married to a mad scientist, if you will, because his poor wife, who was when he met her, she was a 19-year-old Parisian actress. So that was like, you know, definitely something to talk about at parties. she would come outside. And,
very glamorous.
Yeah, yeah, she was a smoke show. Besides.
Oh, yeah. That's, I taught him what smoke show meant on the ride down. So,
hey, I'm hip, I'm hip, I'm current.
But just imagine being this this 19-year-old Parisian actress, and you walk outside, and your husband, as you're yelling, what are you doing out in the yard, Thaddeus? What are you doing? And then all of a sudden, in the basket, he just starts disappearing up into the sky. All of a sudden, he's 100 feet up in the air and everything. But fascinating guy here. That's he pilots the first tethered flight, and he began to attract heavy media attention. And what do you want with media attention? It's the same thing we want for this podcast. European investors, all right? He started getting people fascinated in the idea that you might have a way to stop having to ship things over via the sea. You might have a way to start utilizing the air, like Kate was talking about. So they're all excited about this possible brand new way to have a transatlantic flight where you can bypass the ocean.
Yeah, this whole ballooning thing was definitely the hot topic. I mean, even going back to France in the 1780s, that there was a huge popular following of anything to deal with ballooning. This would gather crowds. As a matter of fact, the Goffler brothers, that was one of their first big deals. That was a whole marketing ploy, that they're putting up this huge balloon, and it's pretty much advertising their paper company kind of a thing, and drawing all thousands of people to for the crowds and stuff. And then all over France, all over England, Germany, everybody's now trying to outdo everybody else with this newfound technology of hot air ballooning. And then almost coinciding at the same time, there's problems with the hot air balloon, that if what is providing the heat source to heat the air sets the balloon on fire, there's a complication there, right?
So, a little bit of a hiccup.
Yes, and then there's another guy.
We still got to cover Lowe here, too. Which name are you about to bring up?
Well, I'm going to bring in just a guy that helps bring about a different gas rather than dealing with hot air.
Talk to me.
There's a guy named Henry Cavendish. He's an Englishman, and although he didn't really discover hydrogen gas, he's the first guy that really kind of brings it out as a separate element, that hydrogen gas is a separate deal. It's also lighter than air, so you're going to get the same buoyancy that you need to provide that lift. The only problem with hydrogen, it's very explosive. So, if you have a match or a flame that could possibly ignite, and now instead of just burning the balloon, now the balloon is blowing up, kind of a thing. And that's another one of the negatives to the Hindenburg flight, is that although it was a little tighter quarters and flying across the Atlantic, and it only took you 2 days. The downside, 1930s, everybody and his brother and sister was a smoker.
And
oh, my God.
They had very restrictive areas, smoking areas set aside, that was specific with closed airlock doors kind of a thing, and there would be a steward there to light your cigar or your cigarette.
The bartender had the one lighter.
That's right.
No,
that's
sure.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
Very
well,
restrictive
matches,
with that.
I'm sure they didn't have right. Lighters back then.
And you weren't walking out of there with, going out on the promenade deck and watching the world go by, smoking a stogie or smoking your cigarette.
Well, a little unsettling here, but I don't know if people know this, or I'm sure I'm allowed to say it at this point, but if you don't know, I did 6 years in the Navy, and the ship that I was on was the USS Kearney. It was a guided missile destroyer, and I thought this was very concerning, that one of my last trips on the ship, we went to Yorktown Weapons Station in order to take on weapons and ammunition for
ordnance,
a deployment,
yeah.
The ordnance that was going to be going on for a deployment later on. And one of the rules when you are in that port is there is no smoking and no cell phone use while you are in port at Yorktown taking on ordnance, for fear that a cigarette or a cell phone could detonate some of the ordnance and cause an incident.
Static electricity, right?
Now imagine my concern when they said, Burke, you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes, which I don't do, and you're not allowed to be on the cell phone, which back in the day was the old school flip phones. So no smoking, no cell phones, but we do need you to weld something.
Oh, no problem. We'll be arcing and sparking.
Wait, what?
Wait a second.
But no, so that was chaos with all that here. But the thing that fascinates me here, and Kate, did you have something earlier? I don't want to cut you off.
Oh, no. I'm good.
Now, this guy, Thaddeus S.C. Lowe, that we're talking about, who's launching that first tethered flight, he is making mass-producing balloons now. He is almost a wizard of the ballooning industry, if you will. And like all great inventions here, The first thing people want to know is, how do we use this to kill someone?
Of course.
The military wants to get involved.
So the military is interested in Mr. Lowe because we have something going on right now. The American Civil War is underway here. And Mr. Lowe actually puts a little a pin, if you will, in his scientific research and follows his patriotic duty in order to go ahead and serve for the Army of the Potomac. He even met with Abraham Lincoln in order to get a job. I swear to God, I'm not making this shit up, Kate. You're going to think we've gone off the rails here. He was the chief aeronaut.
Yep.
Okay, that was his title. He was the chief aeronaut. He was appointed by Abraham Lincoln, and he got the job over several other people competing with him because he raised a balloon, a tethered flight, a balloon about 100 feet above the White House with telegraph equipment in the basket and telegraphed back down to Abraham Lincoln. Thank you. I've just sent the first telegraph via balloon.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Communicating from the skies.
Right, right.
Holy shit, right?
Huge.
Right. And to the military mind, and this wasn't the first time that it was the first time that a telegraph was sent from a balloon. But the military in Europe has used that previous, that it's an observation platform. If you can get high up with a pair of binoculars, you can see where your enemy is going to be at. And if you can report that back down to the ground quickly via a telegraph key, that's freaking awesome.
These are
awesome.
Stealth balloons, too. Hey, do you see that giant red fucking thing in this?
That's right.
With the beautiful yellow stripes.
That's right. Must be a circus in town.
Yeah, enter now what is going to become the formation of, if I could go back in time, Kate, I would join the United States Army Balloon Corps. All right?
Yeah, that's what it was, the Union Army Balloon Corps.
And it really was a thing. I would have been all about it.
I thought it was pretty cool that they're calling themselves aeronauts, too. They're not astronauts. They're aeronauts. You know, that's for the time, that was awesome. And, hey, holy God, you're off the ground. You're up in the air.
Well, like you said, too, now you're up in the sky. You want to be able to take a look at that and see what's going on. I mean, a weird thing that happened with Lowe is he actually at the battle he took place in several major battles where he was spotting things from up in the sky.
Oh, so he was in the balloons, too.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't just sending other guys aloft. He's up there himself.
Yeah, these were a lot of manned flights. Now, one of the flights that he was on, if you will, he actually crashed behind enemy lines. Okay, behind enemy lines. Then got discovered.
That's a bit of an oopsie.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a. Also, again, like we said, it's not really like you can do this in a covert manner. It's a. Hey, where'd that giant red balloon go?
This was here a minute ago.
Yeah, it's right near that red puddle on the ground. But he was an interesting guy. Saw a lot of cool shit. Mr. Lowe, post-war life, by the way, would go on. If you want to tip your cap to Mr. Thaddeus S. C. Lowe here. He also went on later on in life to invent the compression ice machine, also known as ice makers and refrigerators. So
that's a huge invention.
That's
exactly.
Huge.
So that cold beer you enjoyed before the show, Kate, I think we owe that to Mr. Thaddeus S. Seal.
Yeah, he had a lot to do with that.
That hamburger I defrosted that I've had for the past 5 months.
Okay. That's right. A little gray, but that's all right.
That's outstanding.
Put some onion on that burger. Be fine. I want to throw in here, too, that Mr. Thaddeus Lowe, he had another first during the Civil War. It was during the Peninsula Campaign for those Civil War aficionados out there. General George McClellan is the guy that's now in charge of the Union Army, at least in the East. Lowe is given use of an old coal barge. So you got this big, flat-bottomed coal barge kind of a thing that he takes over, and he loads it up with two brand-new balloons, and he was able to come up with this hydrogen gas generator. So these are not hot air balloons. These are hydrogen balloons that they're inflating to take them off. Well, anyhow, he takes this converted coal barge, loads it up with two balloons and hydrogen generators, and fills the thing up. And in essence, what he did with that Lowe is credited with being the first official aircraft carrier on a converted coal barge.
Holy shit.
He took it out into the Potomac River and went aloft to spy on the Confederates, who were then, at that point, retreating back towards Richmond. Pretty cool.
Between that and then what you were telling me earlier, too, that correct me where I'm wrong here, but the Hindenburg was hydrogen inside the rigid hull, correct?
It was.
And some of the original designs were helium, right?
No, so the original, it started with hot air, and then it went over to hydrogen, and because helium was very difficult to come by. Hydrogen, a lot of people could generate large amounts of hydrogen that was necessary. Helium is inert. It's a more stable gas, and it's not going to explode on you like
I'm checking in with Dr. Burke here to make sure you're not bullshitting the audience at home. So far,
he's not bullshitting. That's true. And at the time of the Hindenburg, the United States was producing 80% of the helium in the world, and they had decided in 1929, because German was governed by the Nazis, and they were like, forget this. We are not exporting any helium to Germany, so they had no choice but to use hydrogen.
Great point, Kate.
Could you imagine how much funnier Hitler's speeches would have been, though, if he was on helium?
Yeah. I would love to hear that.
While I'm hooked up to YouTube, I could probably find that.
Well, Matt, if the Hindenburg disaster had helium inside of its rigid hull,
it would have been much funnier.
The call would have been, "Oh, the tornado!"
Oh, the announcer would have just turned into Elmo.
That's it.
But the Wizard of Oz.
Elmo hates the salt.
There it is. Maybe that's where they got that. I wonder.
Say that again, Kate.
The
I'm
Wizard
sorry.
Of Oz Munchkins.
Oh yeah.
Oh God.
Yep, with the balloon.
So now, Mr. Lowe, who
they've been huffing helium for sure.
Very outstanding character there, in Mr. Thaddeus S. C. Lowe, who did see some. He got very pissed off with the Army towards the end because he didn't. He didn't think that they were really using him to his appropriate skill level on a lot of things. He had some feuds. And like all geniuses, he gets fired by the United States military. One of the guys that he manages to inspire, though, very interesting guy here, a man who came to be known as Zeppelin, Baron von Zeppelin.
Give him their full name. You have that one, Kevin?
I sure do here. We wrote it down. I wrote this one down because this is a great name here. If you're into brevity, you're not going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
Born in a town named after his own family, okay? Ferdinand Adolf Heinrich Graf von Zeppelin.
Oh, you forgot an August.
Oh, damn. See, that's
Ferdinand Adolf Heinrich August Graf von Zeppelin.
Oh, jawohl,
mein Herr.
Augustus, save some room for later.
Oh, man.
Home run, Kate. Mr. von Zeppelin, as it were, was a very promising scientific mind and a Prussian military officer. Zeppelin was even an observer for the U.S. Army during the Civil War, and during his stay met Thaddeus S. C. Lowe and witnessed the balloon corps in action, all right, which is pretty cool. Now, he also made it all the way over to St. Paul, Minnesota. And Zeppelin, who was obsessed with flight as a kid, he had drawn designs of, like, the idea of balloons, because this shit's been around forever. I mean, since Icarus with the flying a little bit too close to the sun, we've been obsessed with trying to figure out how to get up into that giant blue thing
right.
in the sky.
Right.
But not for nothing, a German balloonist by the name of John Steiner went ahead and brought Zeppelin up in on his first controlled flight, if you will, in one of these balloons.
Right.
So now he comes over to America, meets Thaddeus S. C. Lowe, who is this crazy balloon guy.
He's
sees him in action.
Yeah, Thaddeus is now working basically for the Union Army, but on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And McClellan, the general in charge of the whole operation on the East Coast, does not allow anybody to take a ride in one of Lowe's balloons. Now, Zeppelin is over here. He's not really. He's just observing the Union Army. He's a German military guy who comes over to America to see what's going on with the American Civil War and how they're handling things. And just he's another military observer. That's all.
It's a lot of tourism in civil wars.
That's right. Right. You get a lot of people wanting to visit, not get involved with the fight, but want to visit. So McClellan doesn't allow Lowe to take Zeppelin up into one of his balloons. So then Zeppelin goes out west and hooks up with a what was the name of the other guy?
John Steiner.
John Steiner, thank you. Now John Steiner is from the Fatherland, so he speaks German, yeah? So who better to, you know, give Zeppelin a free ride in one of his balloons that he's also working for the Union side, so.
And Steiner, what an honor, too, though, to be bringing up a member of the Prussian aristocracy.
Aristocracy,
up
absolutely.
In your, crazy, weird thing here, too. How old do you think Germany is, Kate?
The country itself?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
What is this? Guess your best here?
Yeah.
Well, I like it because
10th century? I really have no idea.
People always think that, right? Germany is actually younger than America in terms of being recognized as a unified state. So that's why it's important that I denoted that he was Prussian. Okay, right. Our boy Zeppelin was Prussian. So there's all the provinces of Germany. They weren't one giant solidified thing.
It wasn't the unified Germany.
Yeah, so which we'll get to that in a second. Oh, boy. But
yeah, we can thank another guy. Well, I won't spill it. I won't tip my hand.
Well, now Mr. Zeppelin goes ahead and he sees this thing, and he thinks, man, we've got to have these back with the Prussians.
Oh, he's fascinated by it. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And he kind of blew his mind when he leaves. By the way, he's age 52 when he goes full on dedication into the ballooning arts, as it were. Okay. So it's kind of like
the ballooning arts.
Yeah. It's very much like when you see a guy quit a prosperous job to pursue a career of stand-up comedy.
That sounds like a fancy name for saying you do whippets.
My buddy Nate sure did appreciate that one. So during the, like we said, that was during the Peninsular Campaign. But now Zeppelin's seen this. We have to have him back home. All right, can't wait to be a part of this. He starts adding his little tiny things onto this to kind of make the design his own, solve some of the problems they were having. So if Thaddeus S.C. Lowe is a genius with the balloons, can't control the balloon enough to not land behind enemy lines, maybe you need to figure out a way to steer these things. Okay, so now that comes into that whole rigid hull thing where they're trying to get a little bit more structure, that where you could kind of fight against the wind a little bit. LP, talk to me.
Well, yeah, with ballooning, there's like really three different types. There's the balloon itself, where as it inflates, the shape of the thing expands, just like a regular kid's party balloon. And as you let the air out or the helium out or whatever you're putting into that balloon, it's going to deflate and come back down again. Then on the early days, to create that bag that's going to hold the hydrogen or the helium or the hot air, that's problematic. How are you going to do that? Certainly, you want something a little more tougher than paper, right? Or coated cloth or something, so that if that thing isn't easily get abraded or anything else. So then they go with a rigid structure. They're building a frame. And then within that, they're putting a skin on the outside of that frame, like a tent kind of a thing, right? And then within that, inside that structure, that's where you're putting the bags that are going to actually hold the gas that's going to give you the lift. So,
but back then, like with the Hindenburg, they were bags inside of there holding the
Hindenburg. Yeah, there's gas bags. That's exactly what they call them, gas bags.
Yeah, I've been called that.
Well. How appropriate. But anyhow, there's gas bags. And there's, because of the size of that whole thing, it's just not one big giant gas bag. There's a whole series of them. So now they have a little more control as to which way this thing is pointing up, down, almost like a ship. Like,
well, you have a little bit of compartments is important.
Compartment, right. So that you can almost trim yourself. In other words, you can come to a more level balance type of thing by letting air in, letting air out, or losing ballast, gaining lift, or gaining.
We're getting very technical on this one.
Well, sorry.
No, it's important for that too, because this is, like we said, he took the design of the balloon and he's completely revolutionized it. And now Zeppelin, you know you're good at something when they name it after you. You know what I mean?
Right.
All right. That it's now become that this rigid hull inflatable ship that's right. Hovering above in the skies.
Well, another
it's
advantage
now known as a Zeppelin.
Right. And now the other advantage of that now too is previous to that, with just a bag or a big balloon, you're going back to what a lot of people commonly think of as the wicker basket, and you're only putting, maybe four or five people into one little basket. Now, if you've got a framework, now you can hang this big gondola underneath the framework. So you've got the framework above you that's actually providing the lift, but underneath is this huge gondola that now you can put passengers and cargo and everything else into, and you got more space to be walking around, and, the bigger the thing is, the more space you might, or the more lift you're going to have, so the more cargo, whether it's passengers or freight or whatever, you can carry. So
it's a little bit more safe now as well, or safer, yeah,
it has more of a aerodynamic. We're right in that era that that word really comes into being, aerodynamic. That was with the car industry and everything else, that if you were aerodynamic, then, oh man, you're going to just slide right through that atmosphere and you're gonna be hot stuff.
Well, now, Kate, you said you probably would never go into a balloon.
I don't see myself doing that.
Kate, you gotta.
Okay, I'll give it if I have the chance.
Well, see, my father's trying to sell you on the joy of this, but I don't think I think he missed it on
Wait,
the adrenaline
KP, have
rush.
Have you done it?
No, never have.
We might have to do it together.
That's a deal.
If you guys do it, I'll do it. Why not?
Well, you can double down with this too, because it was way back when in the 1780s that some of the guys that first went up in the hot air balloons and these early hydrogen balloons, they were also the guys that developed the first parachutes. So they would go up in the balloon and then, hey, wait a minute, what happens if something goes wrong? How do I get down?
Well, it's kind of like falling forward.
Right, right. You know, that tuck and roll is not going to do it for you when you're 300 feet up in the air.
If we do go up in a balloon, though, I'm going to have to insist on the adrenaline rush that would come from what was experienced by the men of the balloon corps. And I'm going to insist someone shoots at us while we're in the balloon.
And we're wearing fatigues.
Right.
But that being said, now you go ahead. You have this the Zeppelin. Like I said, you know you're good at something when you're named after the product becomes you. All right, this is Mr. Jell-O himself, pretty much, and he's got this awesome thing. It's a modern marvel. All right, now the Zeppelin is also very interesting because, and this one's literally I pulled this little nugget out just for the Kahuna, Baron von Zeppelin's. Are characters in Super Mario Brothers 2 in Yoshi World that show up in balloons and drop bombs on Mario. Okay? Those are known as Baron von Zeppelins. That's a true story.
I love how he goes out of his way to find his little nuggets that he knows I will enjoy. He's just like, this is for you.
It's like I said, sometimes we fuck with you too, that I'm lying. But, but that means we do have to get back to eventually hitting the impetus of the entire episode here. But I just thought that was a little bit too interesting to skip over Baron von Zeppelin over here. Now, hence in entering this modern marvel, right, there was various Zeppelins here. Now, we also have these things going on around the world, right, LP? We got there's something in America known as the Akron.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of stuff going on. This wasn't just Germany that was trying to develop this thing. I mean, obviously, this is new technology, and everybody wants to get in on this. If you got your enemy or maybe one day enemy or whatever, somebody else has got this thing that can go up in the air and it can achieve flight. That's a game changer. So everybody's making this mad scramble to play catch up. And it started really with the French, but then, you know, Germany, Italy, Spain, England, United States, they're all into this whole thing.
And it was all seamless, right? There was never any tragedies or mishaps.
Oh,
there were.
Yeah, there was some downsides. There was some definite downsides.
But can I just say, in these balloons, they could traverse the whole planet in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Three weeks,
get around the whole planet.
God
I mean,
damn.
In a boat, I don't even know how long that would take you. Even with the Panama Canal, you know, I mean,
I didn't even think of that.
I mean, that whole around the world in 80 days, that's not too far fetched. And that was by balloon travel, right?
Yes, which was the Jules Verne novel, which for listeners of the show, last week we covered Nellie Bly, who went around the world in 72 days.
Right.
First woman to ever do so. Pretty fascinating lady.
Right.
But so now the Akron, we talked about the casualties of the Hindenburg that we're going to get back to in a second. Akron, a worse tragedy, but not caught on film.
Not caught on film, and that was like the U.S.'s entry into the light. Well, it wasn't its entry, but there was, as I said, there was a number of different airships that were developed by various different countries. And what was interesting is that at the end of the First World War, you know, armistice was declared. And then there was all kinds of ramifications placed on Germany, and a lot of the Zeppelins that they were in process of developing at the close of the First World War, now all of a sudden, by that Versailles Treaty, they weren't allowed to develop that any further, and they actually had to give a lot of that technology away to England, to France, to the United States. So some of those early airships that were now being developed by foreign countries started in Germany and then completed in another country. if you want to know about the Akron was nearly the same size as the Hindenburg. It was only like maybe 18 feet smaller than that. But what was cool about the Akron is that this thing was actually carrying airplanes on board. So it became it became an in-flight aircraft carrier.
So this is the Russian doll of sorts.
There you go. Now, initially, that whole thing was supposed to happen, that they were going to carry these little fighter planes to protect the Zeppelin, right, the Akron, to protect the thing. And then it quickly kind of changed around that rather than that being a protector, they were sending these little planes off of it, off of a trapeze kind of a thing.
They were like taking off of it?
Yeah, they would take off and then re-land on the whole thing, that the Akron would drop down this trapeze, and on the top of the plane there was this big giant hook that they would fly underneath the Zeppelin, right?
So watching this is basically just like, oh, let's go watch the circus, kids. Like, let's see them do this.
Well, that was pretty much it. So, and then they would come in and hook onto this trapeze that was suspended underneath the Akron, and then they could pull them back up inside the Akron. And
so was the Akron hydrogen-based or helium?
That was helium. Let me see.
That sounds really precarious.
That was a helium-based balloon. The Americans were big on helium because they had
a lot of it.
Yeah, they had a lot of it. They were full of gas, right? And that's what your great point that you made before is that they were restricting Germany from getting that. They weren't going to supply Germany with the helium, so that's why Germany was forced to go with the hydrogen gas bags. Now, the Akron was helium, and it still holds the world's record for the largest helium balloon. But, you know, again, initially...
A little asterisk at the end of that.
Yeah. But initially, these planes were going to be like fighter planes to protect the mothership, if you will. And then it became a change around in tactics that they became spotter planes so that they could cover a further field. Again, we're still going up in the air to see where the bad guys are. So now they're sending out these spotter planes off the mothership and coming back. And this was like a development because back in the First World War, I found this to be freaking nutsoid too, but the Germans flew these Zeppelins, and there was one wackadoodle that decided, hey, maybe what we should do, because your point before about you look for the big red thing up in the sky or the big gray thing up in the sky, right? They wanted to fly the balloon or the Zeppelin into a cloud so you wouldn't be able to spot it in the cloud, but then lower some poor bastard in a basket and lower him down below the cloud cover so that he could see what was going on below the cloud cover and, you know, as a spotter, and they would not be able to see where the mothership is. So
spy in a basket.
Spy in a basket.
Eye in the sky, spy in the sky.
Yeah, the only problem with that is now the basket is being affected by the wind currents and everything else, and that poor bastard is now swinging from one side to the other. He's going,
he's going port and starboard as well.
Right.
I hate you for that, KP, because now all I just see is Pee Wee Herman swinging in this fucking plane,
right, freezing his ass off. But
it's a great point too. You don't even think about that. They got to have some sort of a SCBA on at
George,
the time.
George, don't worry. You're going to be okay.
right.
You fucked up. You trusted us.
Right. It's only an 8-hour shift. You'll be all right.
Jeez. But, of course, as always, man is at his best when we're attempting to kill our fellow man. So that's where a lot of the ingenuity is going to come from here.
Now, how many of these Zeppelins were created for travel, like the Hindenburg?
Well, the commercial one, because the Hindenburg, that's a very fair question. Hindenburg was known as LZ-129. Okay, now it was not the first Zeppelin, but it was definitely the largest of its size here. And before we move on, I do want to mention one thing. So if Mr. Zeppelin, Baron Von, is being so fondly remembered, as he is in Germany, still there's still busts of him all over the place, and he's still a well-thought-of guy. I mean, he was a goddamn genius. There's no way around it. But a counterpart of his is the guy who was the namesake of the Zeppelin we are covering here today on this episode, Mr. Hindenburg. Now, like we said, it was a modern marvel over here. It is named after Paul von Hindenburg, who would later become the second president of Germany. Okay, he was a World War I hero. Pretty fascinating guy here. He had quite a legacy, too, by the way. If you do good things in life, you want to be remembered fondly. And if people name shit after you, that sounds like a pretty good way to live your life, right? Like if there's the Dr. Kate Burke Lepus Highway, you're going to want it to be a nice-looking highway, right?
That's right.
I don't think I want a highway named after me. Though.
I don't blame you.
Absolutely. What about a wildlife refuge?
There you go.
I was going to say, that's not very on brand for me, was it?
Right,
damn,
right.
Fucked up.
Giant Sequoia National.
Ooh, now you're talking.
Kate Lepus, Giant Sequoia National Park or something.
Much more apropos. Yeah.
You know what? If you don't want the highway name, I'll take it. Big Kahuna Parkway actually has a nice ring to it.
That does. Yeah.
That sounds like an amusement park. Yeah. But not for nothing, Mr. Paul von Hindenburg, absolute hero in German history and extremely popular figure for the time. Not quite a great legacy. What is the line for camping and for just being green in an ecosystem is that you want to turn the land over, you want to leave the land better than you found it. Is that fair to say?
Leave no trace.
Yeah, or just the way you found it. Or better, I guess, if you're picking up litter and stuff.
Well, Mr. von Hindenburg, he went ahead and he did a lot of great things for Germany here. Some questionable things in his later life and after his death. His legacy had he had a causeway named after him. They went out to an island that burned to death in a fire. Okay, so the causeway's gone due to a fire. Then the Zeppelin that is named after his honor, the world's largest Zeppelin, goes down in flames on national television.
National radio.
Well, it was also captured on film. That's why.
I think his friends called him and be like, "Yo, are you okay?"
Oddly, he was dead at the time of the Hindenburg year. That's why at the time of his death, he was mourned as a German national hero. Unfortunately, the guy he turned.
Did he die because his house burned down?
That would actually be. A better way to go than what winds up actually happening with his legacy. He reluctantly turns over and appoints to power to succeed him in Germany. Guy by the name of Hitler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's that guy.
Yeah, Uncle Adolf was the next in line.
His death allows Adolf to become the Chancellor of Germany, ushering in the complete and total domination of the Nazi Party over Germany.
Congratulations, you played a country.
Did somebody like kill him?
He dies of a heart attack, actually. Oh, yeah, okay. It was pretty. But he had a very complicated legacy to this day because there's so much good. Right. There's so much friggin' good that comes from this guy, and then there's a couple of really shitty things.
Right.
But
like, on the scale, did the good outweigh the bad? Bad outweigh the good?
I would say on a scale of, did I put Hitler in power?
But if he had a heart attack, it's not his fault.
They were reluctant friends, too. There was a lot of weird stuff with that. This is another guy that I got completely lost in while we were covering. But
this is wild.
The point being with him is that this is the guy that they named this Zeppelin after. So you got a pioneer in ballooning with Zeppelin, who's got a Zeppelin named after Hindenburg. So you're trying to – this is the pride of Germany at the time in the 1930s, which was turning into what we would know as Nazi Germany. So – Now, as we were talking about, though, LP, now this is LZ-129, the Hindenburg. Okay?
Right.
This is a commercial flight. This is a big to-do.
Oh, this was – and this wasn't the first transatlantic flight by any stretch of the imagination. There was a Zeppelin before that, the Graf Zeppelin, that flew transatlantic flights back and forth all the time and with a very –
What does Graf mean in German? You told me on the ride down.
That means count.
Yes.
Count. So, when we go back to Zeppelin's full name, there's a Graf von Zeppelin. So it's count. It's really, the translation would be Count von Zeppelin. So
that's the most badass name I think I've heard in a minute. He was Count Zeppelin.
Yeah, like Von Zeppelin.
Count Von Zeppelin.
Also, don't forget, Zeppelin was from a town of Zeppelin with the family name Zeppelin.
So he had
who went on to make.
Yeah, right. He had some.
He was pretty much.
He had some connections.
It reminds me of Lemmy. What's the band's name? Motorhead. What's the song name? Motorhead.
Can I just say something though? Even the Hindenburg. That was his. That was its 35th transatlantic flight.
Yes, it was.
It had done that a lot of times.
Right,
but it was just filmed because it was just still so grand and.
I guess.
It was supposed to be routine coverage because that's a you're on fire, by the way, Kate. Kelly's fired. I hope she knows.
No, I'm
going to
be in trouble if you say that.
But no, this was a regular flight for the Hindenburg to come over. But the big thing was that this is a huge, giant airship. This is the pride, like we said, the pride of Nazi Germany.
It's the biggest thing in the. It's the biggest thing in the world, really.
Exactly. Yeah. And now, now imagine, like we always talked about the Titanic earlier in the show, now imagine the Titanic hovering where you can see all of it. Because really, the Titanic's a spectacle, and about 70% of the ship is underwater, so you can't even see that shit. Nothing stopped me in my tracks more in my entire time in the U.S. Navy than when I saw a ship in dry dock for the first time. And you realize just how far that shit goes underneath the water.
Right.
It's mind-blowing.
Right.
That shit freaks me out. Honestly, the propellers. When I was little and I saw Titanic, when I saw that movie for the first time, and you see how big those things are compared to a person.
Yeah. Oh, it's awe-inspiring.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Oh my God.
Now imagine you're in New York City and you see a giant Titanic flying up in the sky because the Hindenburg actually made sure the captain, Max Pruss, who had flown over the he'd done the transatlantic flight over 175 times, I think. So he was this guy had his sea legs in the air, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and
he had his wings.
Germany to New Jersey or Germany to, the United States was the short run because they were actually flying from Germany to Brazil as well. So that was another.
Rio de Janeiro.
That was another run that they took.
Rio was the city?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, when they fly over, this was a big propaganda thing too, because the Hindenburg had the swastika fully emblazoned all over the whole thing. So I mean, this was
the upper
the pride
and lower
of Germany.
Fantail of the ship.
Yeah, this was the pride of Nazi Germany with this thing, the biggest thing in the world. It's is now in flight, bringing all these highfalutin, well-heeled. High-paying customer base coming over to the United States.
And a very high German population still existing in America. That's one of the largest immigrant groups at the time. So this was something to be proud of. Oh, see, we didn't know all the shit was going on behind closed doors. When I say we, I'm Irish. I have nothing to be concerned with. I'm adopted, by the way. But like you were saying, man, this was something to be proud of. Now, in the city of Manhattan, people are losing their shit seeing this thing flying up in the skyline.
Right.
Okay, pretty cool. And the captain, Max Pruss, made sure to deviate from the original plan of action, if you will, the course, to make sure he could be seen in Manhattan to kind of cause this. There was a little headline seeking in this.
Yeah.
Just a little show offery.
Yeah. With the Titanic too, and then that sunk.
It's isn't it funny how whenever we
show off,
we attempt to
get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, God gives us a quick middle finger. That's us now.
Right,
stay
right.
off.
Just looking at these pictures, like I've for those who can't see it, obviously I'm literally googling pictures of the Hindenburg in New York. This is crazy looking.
Yeah, it looks like
you're
like
not
going to
miss it. Yeah, you're not going to miss it.
The alien ship in Independence Day. That's what I think it looks like. That it's just hovering over there. It's not moving fast. It's just there.
Right.
Okay. But now it's also crap weather. So the ship winds up being about a day and a half late.
Well, that's one of the reasons why they deviated to go up into New York too, because they were rather than going directly to Lakehurst, they deviated to go around Manhattan to show off, but also hoping that the weather was going to clear down around Lakehurst.
Thunderstorms and stuff.
Right. Yes. And you once lived in Leonardo, New Jersey, did you not, Kate? How quickly the weather changes around here.
What?
The Concorde used to fly over my house when I lived there, actually.
No shit, really?
Yeah, like its last flight was, it used to fly right over my neighborhood.
Oh, yep. Goddamn.
Yep. Right.
I had no idea on that one. I also didn't know the Concorde stopped flying, so I've learned something today too here, guys.
Before we leave that whole thing flying around New York, we're right in that same time frame too with the Empire State Building, that the Empire State Building is built in the 30s. And a last-minute thought was, because there was a big scramble with skyscrapers at the time, who's going to build the highest or the tallest skyscraper, and the Empire State Building at one point was going to be the highest building in the world. And to give it a little extra height, they thought, well, wait a minute. Well, wouldn't it be cool that if we could have a dirigible, if we could have a Zeppelin land and more, or anchor, if you will, at the Empire State Building? So they extended a mooring mast on the top of the Empire State Building an additional 200 feet to moor a Zeppelin on the top of the Empire State Building. And then there was going to be a little catwalk or a gangplank, if you will, that would take you down to
I'd poop my pants walking on that.
Absolutely.
Is this a real photo?
That's a real photo. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's She's a showing Zeppelin attached to the top of the Empire State Building.
Right. I was looking up on Google. I was like, there is no way that you couldn't pay me to make that walk.
They were thinking that, hey, wouldn't it be cool that, somebody, we could put people right in Midtown Manhattan by exiting the Zeppelin and walking down the gangplank, getting into, and I think the elevators were like at the 82nd floor, so you were hoofing it a long way, and then the crew and everybody and supplies and everybody else would have to be coming up.
So but the Empire State Building was almost the first standing airport.
yeah,
it was, it was. I mean, I'll do anything to not pay that Lincoln Tunnel toll. I'll put it there.
Yeah, well, it was. And I think it was only active. That photo that you saw, it was only there for like 3 minutes. And they quickly realized, hey, this is nutsy because the various wind currents being created, and there were incidents where the balloons, rather than tying up at the nose and the balloon or the Zeppelin remaining horizontal, now you all of a sudden they get an updraft and that whole thing is now standing on its nose. That upsets the passengers a little bit when you go from horizontal to vertical.
I couldn't. And I wonder why this didn't take off.
Yeah. But I thought that was just an interesting little side note that somebody thought it would be a great idea, but they did get an extra 200 feet out of the.
Cahoon's finding some quality pictures here too. By the way, he's got the docking. So I'm going to put all these up on the Instagram for the thing.
That is the craziest looking thing.
That is an awesome photo.
So for those who are like, "What did he just show?" It's literally the top floor from if you were to look up.
Yeah, that's the that's the observation deck. You're looking from the observation deck.
Top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Top of the Empire State Building. Yeah, that might have been a little upsetting, but they quickly
had to wash too many drawers with that setup. So they're like, you know what? This isn't worth it.
Right. That's right. Wet pickup aisle three. They quickly realized that wasn't going to really do the job intended, and it was quickly transferred over to be radio antennas, and now it's cell phone antennas and everything else up there. So they still made use out of the extra.
Oh, height, I mean, you have to with that real estate, right, but right. I mean, this is insane. I'm going to post a bunch of these pictures because this is all interesting shit here. But I know we're starting to run out of time, so I want to get. Let's get to the crux of it now, man. We unpacked everything here. We're right back. Let's talk tragedy, guys. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
That's right.
So now the ship goes ahead, and it's going to come into to port here. Now, the German, in Germany, rather, or in other parts of the country, specifically in Germany, they weren't really using those very high-in-the-air mooring masts you were talking about.
Right, high mast. That was an American low special. Mast, right.
So the Hindenburg is essentially the same thing that happens when you try to plug an iPhone charger into a German outlet. Okay, you got to have the adapters on and, figuring some shit out here. Bad stuff's going to happen.
Right.
So they argue that while it was attempting to moor in there, that there's a lot of maneuvers that Captain Max Press had to make in order to accommodate the mooring, which, again, was outside the normal thing for the Zeppelin pilot, who, again, this guy is not a friggin' – he ain't green, all right?
Right.
He knows his shit.
Right.
Goes ahead, and as he's starting to pull in here – there's a ground crew, a lot of spectators checking the whole thing out, and our boy Herb Morrison is on the ground for what he thinks is just going to be a routine day at the office. We're going to cover something real quick. Winds up catching pretty much the entire thing on film. I thought this was interesting. As of right now in 2019, January 3rd, 2019, when we're recording this podcast, we still don't know what the fuck happened.
Right.
There's no official story.
No little black box recording all
yeah, right.
The
there
data,
was no flight.
Not bad.
Good point, Ed. Great point, Kat. Yeah, that technology hasn't come into play yet. That to capture the black box to find out what went wrong.
There's photos of the Hindenburg coming in to land. There's a video of the Hindenburg coming in to land. There is photos of the explosion. There's videos of the explosion. There's nothing at the inception of the explosion. So to this day, eyewitnesses' accounts are still varying on what part of the Hindenburg actually caught up in flames.
Even that footage, there's like a weird jump, but it's not like a cut in the film. It's like it goes from normal for like literally 1 second and then jumps right into fire. And there's not even like a visible cut or anything. Like no indication of where it started. It's just...
And eyewitness accounts differed too depending on what side of the balloon they were observing from. You know, some people say it started on the port, some say it on the starboard, you know, aft.
It's like a Laurel and Yanni moment, but with death. So
yeah.
Oh, my God.
I shoehorned that one in. Lawrence has no idea. He just laughed because he's polite.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Oh, there was a thing on the that was trending a while ago where you would click button and you would hear if it was saying Laurel or Yanni. And
the newest
did
one,
you see the one with Grover?
Yeah, the newest one is Grover. Oh, yeah, they think...
Did you see that?
What is he talking about?
They think Grover dropped an F-bomb on
Sesame
Street.
That's a fucking awesome idea.
Yeah.
That's a fucking excellent idea. But he's really saying, that sounds like an excellent idea, but it really sounds like he's saying that's a fucking
excellent idea. It really is. It's like... Grover,
don't leave your mic on. Come on, bud. But
today's letter is F.
Not bad, sir. Like we said, still a mystery as to what caused this fire. Now, as we said earlier, too, this shit happened in 40 seconds. Okay, pretty much within 40 seconds. And the people that are in that little caboose, if you will, that the actual passengers and the crew members, they descend 200 feet. Almost immediately. It is like a version of the Tower of Terror in MGM Studios on steroids. Yeah. Okay, just you're falling fast.
And let's throw a little fire and explosion in it too, you know?
Well, because you saw how it all goes up in flames. It's almost – what was interesting about that I was reading is it was almost a contained explosion because the rigid hull was actually a container in and of itself. So you're not getting a giant mushroom cloud effect. You're getting the gases are going to burn up. So the gas burned up almost immediately. The diesel fuel on board – burned for like the next 12 to 15 hours.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yeah, there was diesel fuel on board, which was terrifying.
Well, that's what provided the propulsion to move this thing forward. I mean, again,
always something,
the hydrogen is going to give you the lift, but it was the diesel fuel powering the propellers, if you will, to give you the thrust to move you forward.
Now, there were survivors on the Hindenburg, right?
That's what's insane. When you look at this footage, you're thinking there's no way anybody walked away. But and yet only
62 people.
Yes. A lot of them were.
You have done some research.
This is let the record show. Multiple note cards too. She is handwritten note cards. This was not a. She didn't phone this one in.
And her literary sister did not. So I just want to put that out there.
If I don't write it, I don't remember it.
I am the same way.
There you go.
So, but what I thought was interesting too, though, is that now because of as it's attempting to go into that mooring station and it bursts into flames, Captain Max Pruss is actually one of the survivors. And actually pulls out his radio operator and saves his life as they're pulling him out of the ashes of this thing. Because when you watch the footage, you can see people running towards the incident to try to take care of it. I mean, what the hell are you going to do? That's like – I mean, you're running towards because the instinct is to try to help. But what the fuck do you do?
Right.
I heard a story of a guy who was probably like 25 or something like that, and he jumped out the window and escaped and ran away and then was like, holy shit. And he ran back and he like saved a couple of people.
Holy shit. I don't know if I would have gone back, I'm being honest. Captain Max Pruss also was pulling survivors out of here, so he eventually had to be restrained by first responders on the ground. They were able to save a lot of people. Most people did experience some burns. I mean, how do you not with an explosion of that size? And literally when you're in a tiny little thing being carried around by the explosion. But I thought this was interesting. They also mentioned that even though it is still a mystery, one thing that's come up, there's conspiracy theories. One even conspiracy theory would state that Hitler himself had the ship downed for some nefarious reason. Another one is that there was an author who put out a couple of things saying that there was conspiracy theories that a saboteur was on board the ship. And they even traced his – the guy's name was Phelps, I believe. And he was – there were certain parts of the ship, compartments that only he would have access to where the fire possibly could have started. Then he also had a Jewish girlfriend who was a communist. I mean, there was lots –
He's guilty.
Yeah,
that's right.
They're still formulating theories. Yeah, the Gestapo had actually cornered him at one point to question him about certain things. And Max Pruss, the captain, to his deathbed, swore up and down, "There's no, I didn't do shit wrong. This is sabotage. All right, somebody got us." And they continue to argue. One of the theories actually was about they blamed the incident on St. Elmo's fire.
Oh, so, I read that.
Yeah, Judd Nelson. Yeah. Can you believe
it? That's right.
That bastard.
But just stuck to the damn Breakfast Club.
Is it fair to ask you what St. Elmo's fire is, Kate?
I did look it up. it has something to do with static electricity.
Yes.
But it's static electricity that is continuous. So it's not like a zap when you touch somebody's arm after you shuffle across the rug. But it also needs like a thunderstorm, so strong electricity from like a lightning strike to create the static that literally just kind of lasts for a while. And they called it St. Elmo's because I guess during thunderstorms it would be, I don't know about a common occurrence, but it would occur at the top of masts of ships.
Yes.
Like back in the day. And these sailors would be like, "It's God," you know, because mm-hmm. there would be this glowing thing on the top of the ship, and so
it was a nautical thing too, which I thought was really cool. But it's also commonly associated with the Bermuda Triangle. Incidents of the Bermuda Triangle also involve St. Elmo's fire.
Oh, that's interesting.
I thought that was pretty cool. It was.
Are you going to do an episode about
the Bermuda Triangle?
We should down the road. It all depends on whether or not you want to come back, Dr. Lapis, all right?
That's right.
That's the next Halloween episode.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Not a bad one at all here. Now, I know we have to wrap up because we're going long again, as always, because we have fun on this show. I'm sorry. All right? But the one thing that the saboteur thing has never actually been agreed upon by a bunch of the scientists that looked into it. One scientist by the name of Addison Bain, who worked for an organization known as NASA. He went ahead and he is considered one of the foremost experts on the Hindenburg incident. He concludes that what he thinks happened was that the canopy, that the lubricant that was used for the canopy to go over the ribs, if you will, of the ship, that rigid hull, the canopy that was going over that, essentially was incendiary paint. Now, if you wanted to build something that was going to have, you know, hydrogen and flames in a giant space like this, you'd probably want to make sure it wasn't flammable, right?
Right.
It's just like don't smoke a cigarette when you've been working with kerosene.
Yeah, well, they would paint that stuff to try to give it, you know, the airtightness so it would hold the hydrogen without having the hydrogen leak out. And back in the 30s, there was no latex paint, so everything would have probably an oil-based kind of a thing, and anybody that's done refinishing knows that if you got oily rags, you don't just crumple them up into a pile and throw them into the corner because you could have spontaneous combustion.
Anymore.
Yeah. Anymore. Right.
But now this the thing goes up in flames here. Again, officially no actual answer for this, but they do believe that the lubricant that was put onto the canopy over here could have been, like we said, incendiary paint, which would have been prone to exploding. So if there was static electricity, could be caused by St. Elmo's fire.
Right.
Also, it is a rainy day when they're attempting to moor.
Thunderstorms were in the area. It's one of the reasons why they diverted the hope for better weather upon the landing. And you got this German crew flying the Zeppelin, and now you got an American ground crew that, you know, is there a communication problem here? And the German crew was not used to mooring on a high mast kind of thing. So there's a lot of things going on here that –
Can we talk about mooring?
Mooring
for a second? Because I think it's really interesting that back then we want to set this thing down. All right, throw down the ropes. Okay, everybody, pull. I mean, that's how they got this thing down to the ground.
I wish there was a more scientific thing, but essentially that's how we got all the ships underway in the Navy still.
Right.
One thing I did think was interesting, I don't know if you came across this in your research, but – I thought it was interesting that one of the reasons why the mooring masts in the American Zeppelin industry was more popular was because you could do it with a reduced crew. So if you want to save a little scratch at the airfield,
course,
you want to go ahead
course.
And do that. So.
Right.
Did you have anything
but
else?
But there was also, to Kate's point, with the Akron, which was the American version of these giant Zeppelins, there was an incident where they were attempting to moor this thing. And you got to, you know, they're throwing down the lines, and the guys on the ground are grabbing a hold of it and trying to, you know, tether the thing, pull it back down into the ground, and all of a sudden there's this uplift, and now there's guys hanging on the ropes, and they're being lifted off the ground, and one guy fell to his death, two guys fell to their death, and then a third guy was able, they were able to pull him up into the Akron before they finally were able to land the thing.
That's big fat nope.
Yeah, that was... That's not my
just
line
a
of
shitty
work,
game of tug of war.
I was reading while you were talking about it. I was actually reading up on the Akron. There was not one, not two, but three accidents with this ship before it actually was before it actually had its major crash.
Right, its final mishap.
And the second one that was the mooring accident. It actually departed from Lakehurst.
Right. Oh, really?
Whoa. Yeah. Lakehurst was the naval station, and that was the Air Naval Station, so.
And that accident actually is on film. You can actually find it.
Now I'm going to have to Google that one.
I don't want to see that one.
I thought it was interesting, too, talking about static electricity and everything. When they have to moor and they throw down the ropes, the guys on the ground have to be trained to allow that rope to hit the ground so that any electricity that collects grounds into the planet. Because if you just grab that rope, you're going to get electrocuted and killed.
Right.
Especially on a rainy day, like they were saying, too.
And something that size. I mean, you're saying what happens when you walk across the wool rug with leather slippers and you touch somebody. You get a little zap, right?
The surface area of a huge zeppelin.
Yeah. You got a more than just a tiny little ouch that hurts. That's...
So essentially, too, this is just a giant series of unfortunate events.
Yeah.
Okay, that everything that could have gone, little tiny things that all went wrong, wind up putting. And just the fact that the people were there from NBC, that it was NBC that got the news on footage.
Giant floating bags of nope.
Yeah. And I mean, what a spectacular display of and that quote of "Oh, the humanity." If this entire crash took place in 40 seconds. Then that in that 40 seconds, you pretty much saw what we covered from Thaddeus S.C. Lowe with the ballooning around in the Civil War era, to Baron von Zeppelin getting this modern marvel created, to the Hindenburg flying over Manhattan in the skyline, trying to really show the world, hey, look what we've done. Here's something pretty cool. All right. In that 40 seconds, the lighter-than-air industry essentially dies.
Went to shit.
Yeah.
Yep. Nope.
It's not great marketing.
Yeah.
Have you thought about, you know, let's for the honeymoon, let's take the missus out and we'll go on a Zeppelin together.
Right.
Oh, you mean that thing that just blew up on the fucking news?
I did hear a story about a guy who was a perfume executive and he was in Europe and he promised his wife he would not fly during the trip. But then he couldn't resist and he got on the Hindenburg and he came home early to surprise her for Mother's Day, but he did not make it.
Damn.
It's like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife, Kate. Oh, my God.
See, that's how ghosts get created.
Yes.
Okay?
Right.
Like, the woman's still waiting. Like,
jeez, now I'm unsettled.
So how many ghosties are walking around Lakehurst right now?
Actually,
right?
They say Lakehurst is incredibly haunted because of the Hindenburg.
Oh, really?
Well, because there's still a monument to it down there that you can request tours that when it's a little bit nicer out. We were going to see if you wanted to come down one day, Kate.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
I think there's a few remains that they have on display there, too.
There's a Hangar 1 that's still standing.
Hindenburg remains.
It'd be fucked up if it was somebody's severed head.
Yeah. a little crispy.
But there's the placard on the ground, if you will. Yeah, that was dark, Dad.
even for you.
But there is you can still see the ground where it hit, if you will. And then also Hangar 1 has now been turned into – there's a chunk of it that's been turned into a museum to kind of commemorate the Hindenburg on that one. Now, that being said, we're at the hour 22 mark here. I want to say thank you to everybody who's listening at home. Any final notes from Kate or my father?
Well, I have a little something that I dug out.
I know you have the last thing that we want to throw here for Kate, but I just wanted – because Kate did legit research, so I want to make sure we don't hit anything.
I just want to talk about the chemical structure of helium and oxygen. I'm just joking. No, I'm good.
No, first of all, Kate, thank you for doing this. You know, I love you. You're the best. And
I love you, too.
I want to say thank you to the Kahuna for taking good care of us over here. Now, this thing, I'm going to say the goodbyes right now because the what the fuck moment we're about to end on is triumphant. Okay. So if you guys are liking the show, do me a favor. Like, subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes. All that shit really helps us out. Like I said, thank you for helping us reach over 4,000 listens so far. We're going to keep the show going here. We're having a great time with it. This is my dream project. I'm very happy with it. Check me out at kpburksucks.com or kbburkcomic.com if you're a booker and I don't want you to know that I bought the domain name KB Burke Sucks. And at KB Burke Sucks on Instagram and Twitter, KB Burke on Facebook. LP, do me a favor here. Take us out on a weird note.
This is kind of a weird note. Kate, have you ever heard of the band Led Zeppelin?
Ooh, it's my favorite, all-time favorite.
That's what I thought. Led Zeppelin, one of the most influential rock bands in history. They had a pretty long career going from 68 to 80s, and they put a couple of albums together, right?
Pretty good ones.
The band's album, Led Zeppelin IV, which features the timeless song Stairway to Heaven, is still regarded as one of the greatest rock albums of all time, right? Agreed?
Agreed.
When they first started playing together in 68, they used the name the Yardbirds. They weren't known as Led Zeppelin. They were calling themselves the Yardbirds. Problem with that is the Yardbirds was a band that one of the guys played with previous to forming what we now know as Led Zeppelin. And the former bassist of the Yardbirds threatened to sue the band over the name rights. So they decided, well, we got to come up with a new name. So they were going around with different things, and they were going to call themselves the Lead Balloon or whatever. But finally, they decided, hey, Zeppelin, that's a really cool sounding name. So they decided to go with Led Zeppelin.
So you want me to start singing some songs now, right?
There you go.
Welcome to the sing-along portion of American Losers, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm sure Maddie's got a few on vinyl, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, these guys are absolute rock stars around the world, and they start organizing a European tour. And then in February, they were going to treat their numerous fans across Western and Northern Europe with the tour dates. However, there was one particular aristocrat who wasn't too pleased with that idea. This aristocrat was none other than Frau Eva von Zeppelin. Now, Eva von Zeppelin was the granddaughter of Count Ferdinand von Zeppelin, right? Her granddaddy was the guy that started this whole thing. So she wasn't pleased that this rock band musicians are now using the Zeppelin name for the name of their group. And she was outraged to use her family name. She thought they were disgraceful and utterly disrespectful, and she threatened to take legal action against the band if they played a show in where she was living in Copenhagen. So, you know, now the band is being threatened with legal action if they handle.
She thought she referred to them as a bunch of long-haired howling monkeys.
Shrieking monkeys.
Not a great review.
That was a quote. Yeah, right. At the time, Frau Zeppelin.
Speak for yourself. If I was in a rock band and that was a review, I'd put that on the vinyl.
you're heading in the right direction, Nick. It was what the band actually did. But Frau Zeppelin thought them, quote, shrieking monkeys, unquote, and eagerly tried to convince the authorities that her age-old family name was being slandered, and Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin still did appear on Danish television, and then, according to Page, there was a meeting set up at the same TV studio, and surprisingly, Frau Zeppelin enjoyed hanging out with the band. So they had a meeting. They had a sit down between Frau Zeppelin and
Led Zeppelin.
And Led Zeppelin, the band.
She just walks in, it smells funny in here.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why she thought,
you guys aren't that bad.
Right. So they were hanging out for a while, and she even agreed to let them continue to at the conclusion of this sit-down meeting. Frau Zeppelin agreed that, they could use the name and everything else, and everything was what they thought everything was squared up and everything was going to be good to go. Unfortunately, upon exiting the studio, she notices the cover of their album.
No freaking
which is
way.
Like a world famous photo of the giant Zeppelin blowing up in Lakehurst, and that pretty much put the kibosh on Frau Zeppelin allowing them to to continue on using the name as Led Zeppelin. So they were still going to appear at this show in Copenhagen, and you know, she was now really like adamant. She's going to the battlements with this and threatening. All, she hires several high profile lawyers to do battle with these guys legally to make certain that they're not going to use the Zeppelin name, and so now. The band is like, oh shit! What the fuck are we gonna do here? You know, if we perform, yeah, we don't need this, right? So they decide that the band ultimately employed a tongue-in-cheek strategy. They decided to play the Copenhagen show, but use a different name. So for that one show in Copenhagen, they didn't go by the name Led Zeppelin. They called themselves the Knobs.
What an awful name.
Yeah. And the name was a pun because the name of their European promoter was Claude Knobs. So they became known as the Knobs. The temporary name stopped Eva von Zeppelin and her lawyers from taking any legal action. And actually, it became a big plus to the Led Zeppelin band because now they got all of this notoriety of this von Zeppelin babe threatening to sue and everything else. So they got worldwide publicity out of this whole thing, and actually they did a tremendous job of promoting their band. Being now that Frau Zeppelin thought they were a bunch of shrieking monkeys, it was spun around to be a positive.
Did you know that one ahead of time, Kate, or no?
I did not know all that.
See, I found that one out because when we do the research for the show, it's just a series of the two of us saying, holy shit. And when he whipped that one out, I said, there is no greater note to go out on. That's
right. I like it. So, thank you.
That being said, Kate, thanks for coming to the show. Dad, thanks for being here. Cahoons, thanks for all you do. Mike and Ming over at A Shared Universe, thank you guys for letting us use this space. Guys, my name is KP Burke, and that was the Hindenburg American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.